Well, thank you all, and happy Halloween. I actually brought plastic fangs to do this presentation in, but I couldn't find them in my bag, so we'll just have to go with without that. Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here this morning to give you some of our evaluation of a coordinated school health grant program that we have done. We have not been bribed or have any other kind of financial relationship that we should tell you about. I'm going to cover kind of a little background to our study, some of the methodology, some of the results, and then I would do more of the quantitative results, and my colleague, Dr. Bouchard, will cover the qualitative, so we have a little bit of both. This is the results of a five-year coordinated school health grant initiative. It covered 29 Kentucky school districts, and eventually we had over 97,820 children in grades 4 through 12 that were part of the study over the length of its thing. Here's a map of Kentucky, and you can see the counties, or school districts rather, that participated. They were entered into the study in two cohorts. Each cohort was 2 years. Though they receive additional funding for follow-up if they would continue with that. So you can see our cohort 1 and 2. Being unfamiliar with Kentucky, these particular counties are primarily rural counties or in small urban areas. And our YRBS data, our Youth Risk Behavior Survey data, shows that these children, like most rural children, have higher risky health behaviors than their peers in some of our statewide or in our urban areas. To get one of the coordinated school health grants, each school, either public or private districts, could submit a proposal. Out of these, 29 were selected to receive a grant for 2 years. Each one did a different program. Each one tailored their program to their specific district, so there was not a single program that they all did. As far as how we collected data, the grantees had to report a whole bunch of data, including self-reported student health behavior using a modified YRBS instrument. We also collected standardized test scores using Kentucky's CATS scores. We collected, the schools had to submit their school health policies, their average attendance data, which Kentucky has the same thing as California. You get money for every day a student is there. We also categorized the 29 grantees by their fidelity to the coordinated school health model, where they included their staff, their faculty, their the lunchroom people, the mental health people, and the students, of course. And then we have done some statistical analysis determining whether the fidelity had a significant connection to the students' health behaviors, their attendance, and their standardized test scores. And here's are the results. Since we have short amount of time, we'll dive right in. We asked if wondered if the coordinated school health program improved children and youth's health behaviors as measured on the California Healthy Kids Survey, which we used as well. That was used with children in fourth and fifth grades, and the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which was collected on children from grades 6 through 12. And the result was we found that there was a significance, even in the schools that offered less PE than their other schools. Those that were categorized as having high fidelity or high performing, these schools did, their students did report that they got 60 minutes or more of sustained physical activity. So less PE, but the students reported they actually were more active in the schools that were really pushing and adhered to the coordinated school health model. So the low-performing grantees reported the fewest days, so there was a relationship there. We looked at improvements in average daily attendance and found no statistical impact on that. We also looked at improvements in standardized test scores, and unfortunately we also found no statistically significant impact there. One thing I should mention, a limitation of this study, is that we looked at the test scores and attendance data for each district. We did not have a date, we could not collect data on each student, collected their attendance data, their test data, and their behavioral data. That was not allowed. So this is more at the level of the school district, and there was no significance. If we had been able to look at the student level, we may have found significance. We wonder, but we do not know. We did find that two-thirds of the grantees did report investing in health-related infrastructure, such as fitness equipment, climbing walls, walking paths, healthy snack vending machines, blood pressure monitors, and other investments. So they did use the money to make long-term investments in infrastructure that they will continue to use. We also found that there were improvements to school health policies as measured by the school health index that they had to report. So if they received one of these grants, we found that they did, over the initial two-year funding, report quite an increase in the adoption of health-related policies, especially in the area of staff wellness. Many of these already had policies in place covering students, but they really increased their staff wellness areas. After the initial two-year funding, there was kind of a decline. So as long as they were being paid and there was a significant amount of money coming in to support these programs and push coordinated school health, the adoption went up. But after that, there was a trend that implementation declined. Among those who also continued to provide data and receive a small stipend for providing that data, we also found a gradual decline in the implementation and adoption of health policies. So what you can draw from that is that if you fund coordinated school health, at least in the policy area, people will continue to adopt and implement these policies. But if the funding's not there, at least in our experience, these policies decline. Next, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Bouchard, who will kind of cover the qualitative interviews and data from there. So thank you.
Good morning. I did not bring fangs or anything like it. I actually wore a suit. Thanks, Jeff. I have to say that, well, first off, that I'm a program officer for the Foundation for Healthy Kentucky that funded this initiative. I am, however, a public health educator by training, so I really came into the foundation as a public health person and not understanding philanthropy very well. And I can tell you, if you don't know, program officers have a portfolio of grants that they monitor, because I didn't know that coming into philanthropy. And this initiative was already started, actually had been funded for several years when I was hired by the foundation. And seeing what was happening, Jeff and I kept in very close touch, and we saw what was happening with the quantitative results, that they weren't turning out exactly as we had hoped they would, with improved attendance and improved standardized test scores. And because as a program officer I saw these grantees regularly, I thought, you know, I'm going to find out exactly what went wrong, what works. You know, we're a learning organization, so we wanted to know what actually had worked and how this actually played out in the schools or districts. So I was able to get interviews with 22 of the 29 original grantees, which were either schools or districts. And all but three of the actual interviewees had been at the beginning of the grant, so they really understood what had happened. I did 1 to 1.5 hour interviews, face-to-face, open-ended questions. I did not record the interviews, which I wish I would have looking back, but I did transcribe them. It was kind of, I didn't want to really intimidate them. You're already a program officer and you have the money. So I tried to keep it very casual. The interviewees, and hence most of the grant coordinators, were either health coordinators, and in Kentucky, that may have meant in name only, so they may have been the DPP, Director of Pupil Personnel, which means the old truant officer. That may have been the health coordinator. Nurses, Family Resource Center staff. In Kentucky, we have Family Resource Centers, which are liaison bodies between families and schools, which are dynamite. If you don't have that in your state, it's worth everything we fund them. The guidance counselor, possibly a PE teacher. Very, very low on this list is administrator. We had one administrator who was also the grant coordinator, and she was wonderful, and they were a high-achieving school. So that gives you a kind of a look into what I'm going to say about administrators. What they said about what the grant did in their school was most of the interviewees said it put health on the radar, which meant it wasn't on the radar to begin with. So that bit of funding, and I don't know if Jeff said, originally the very first year the cohort could get up to $50,000 in funding. The second year they could get up to $25,000, or it was $20 per student the first year, $10 per student. second year. They also said a positive effect was that the staff looked at healthy ways to do things, whether they were teaching social studies or they were the cafeteria worker. It improved PE, not in all the grant schools, but it could have improved PE, and that was a pretty common response. Health services, many of them used the funding to hire a nurse, and when they did that to the grantee, to the school, when the funding was gone, the board found a way to keep that nurse on. That's how successful they felt that was. It improved staff health, as Jeff said, teacher morale, and especially for the PE teachers. They said all of a sudden they've got some money. They can buy things. You know, it really improved their program and it improved their morale. And then nutrition. And there was another reason why our grant funding helped with nutrition improvements. Some of the difficulties, they said, oddly enough, were the assessments. They felt they were rather onerous. It was hard to get the staff on board. We did the fitness gram, which really took a big chunk of time and effort from the staff. Staff buy-in was difficult in many of the grant sites. And then the workload that went on the health, on the grant coordinator. They got the money. The administrator thought, okay, you got the money, you do it. No release time for that. So improvement that was needed, they felt that a full-time coordinator would have been nirvana. A release time would have been absolutely necessary. And then incentives for the employee wellness, because the whole trickle-down effect, people thought you start with the staff, they pass that on to the students. And then communication between the staff and the Wellness Council. The Wellness Council, that was in 2006, 2005, when the feds said, you know, you needed to have this Wellness Council. And sometimes it was checking off a box. Okay, got the guidance counselor, got the nutrition person, got the this, got this. But then there wasn't a whole lot of communication between the council and the staff to say, yeah, we support this. They also felt better policies, which, you know, goes with what Catherine had to say. And oddly enough, they said, many of the interviewees said, you know, unless you make us do this, we're not going to, as far as physical activity, 30 minutes of physical activity. They said, we wish somebody would pass a bill that said that. Surprised me. And then to keep the same grant coordinator for continuity over the years. And that is health coordinator. For me, it was grant coordinator. And then the impact, the actual policy impact. Well, concurrently with our grant making, Kentucky did a groundbreaking thing and passed a Senate Bill 172, which is called commonly the junk food bill. And it took less healthy food out of the vending machines. It put some stipulations on a la carte menu. It improved the quality of food in the cafeterias. It was really an amazing bill, and it happened at the same time. So we kind of cheated because some of the policies that went into place weren't as a result of the grant, but because of this serendipitous relationship. And then 24/7 tobacco-free schools. That was a common policy that went into place. And that may not sound much to you, but in Kentucky, that was a big deal. Healthy snacks, so that teachers couldn't, you know, give candy as a reward. They couldn't withhold recess as a punishment. Another policy that I don't know if it was due to the grant funding, but a lot of medication policies, then I think it came as a result of having the nurses in the schools. And then some of the possible things that were in the works but they felt were taking long time, safe routes to school, which in rural Kentucky is a real challenge, 30 minutes of physical activity a day, and then clean air, not having the buses idle outside the schools. Some of the advice from the grantees, because that was one of the questions I asked, what would you say to another potential grantee? And they said, get a full-time grant coordinator. Or at least somebody with a lot of release time, because it really is a task to keep that going in the schools or in the district, which would be multiple schools. Using the School Health Index as a planning tool, the assistant superintendent that we had as a grant coordinator said every year she sits down and does it with her staff, and they use it to strategize, and she just thought that was a wonderful tool. Support from administration and partners, really I should have bumped that up to the top, because they said if you don't have the administration on board, forget it. If you have the superintendent who understands the connection between academics and health, that's wonderful. The principal may be even more influential because he or she is there day after day. And they said if they think it's their idea, if the administrator thinks it's their idea, it's going to go. That was a quote. Advanced planning from a well-selected council, and this was an eye-opener, you know, not necessarily having the typical people on the council, but having people that they knew were going to be cheerleaders and keep the efforts going. And then they said, choose your allies carefully on the staff, again, so you, even if they're not on the council, that you know that PE teacher is going to support your efforts, or you know that the social studies teacher is going to want to do the Take 10 program where, you know, they combine academic learning with physical activity. And then I asked them lastly, what can the foundation do for you? And when you work for a foundation, you know what the answer is going to be. But oddly enough, they didn't say money right off the bat. Some people said money eventually, but they said advocacy, which absolutely blew me away, because we have this whole, which I'm sure many of you do, we work for schools, we work for government, we can't do advocacy. People think advocacy is lobbying. And in addition to school health, advocacy is the other grant in my portfolio. So they said, get out there, please, and talk to the policymakers and have them pass some of these policies so that we can improve the health of our schools. And then also they wanted more information about other grants, models they could follow, and what current research says, so they could take that to their administrators. And then lastly, they said money would be nice too. So what did we learn? Number one, get support from the administrators right up front. Parents, teachers, community partners, and that has really influenced our current grant making. We are going to work at the community level. If schools see themselves as part of the community, that's wonderful, but we aren't going to limit our grant making to schools. Choose the Wellness Council carefully, develop a team of cheerleaders, offer release or full-time for the coordinated school health lead, and this too was a quote. You need the culture of wellness at home and schools, and I'm going to add in the communities, because they said, you know, what's done at school can be undone in a matter of minutes back at the home. So this was a learning experience for me, probably for Jeff too, and we thank University of Kentucky and Jeff and his staff for the wonderful work they did, and I hope I have some questions after this. Thank you very much.
We've got time for one question, and maybe we'll have more time at the end. So is there a question?
Hi. Can you share what the schools see in terms of money, how big were the grants?
The first year, depending on the size of the student enrollment, they could get up to $20 per student. Well, they got $20 per student. Or up to $50,000. So it was a district with, you know, thousands of students. But we had one middle school who, you know, we really cashed in because it was just one middle school. The second year they could get $10 per student, they're up to $25,000. And then after that we offered them a $1,000 stipend to continue doing the data collection.
And then how many continue now with the $1,000?
Every year it changed a little bit. We had quite a lot the third year, fourth year it dwindled down. I think we had about a dozen by the end of the project.
That was after me begging and pleading and cajoling. I have to say they did not have an ideal data collection system. There were many issues with it, and they did the best.
Probably the biggest problem we faced are the coordinator of the program kept changing, like moving jobs, and so someone would just be handed this and say, go collect thousands of surveys for kids. And be like, I don't know nothing about this, how do I do this? So that was a big issue for us. But thank you very much.
Thank you.